Along with air and water, soil is the basis for life on Earth. But it's easy to take for granted, especially in Iowa. This hour, we'll talk about soil health in our state and around the country. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The way we think about and manage soil health is changing. Scientists and farmers alike are moving from thinking about soil as a chemical compound to thinking about it as a living organism. Today, I'll talk with soil scientists, policymakers, and farmers about how these ideas are changing policy and practices here and around the world. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. 2015 was declared the International Year of Soils by the UN General Assembly. Now it's 2016. We're going to take stock of what we've learned about soil health and talk with different people about their priorities as policymakers and farmers. My first guest today is Jason Weller, Chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service, part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Hello, Jason.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And I want to talk about some name changes that have been going on with the NRCS. The Soil Survey Program was established way back in 1896. In 1966, it was expanded in scope, and now it's recently been renamed the Soil Science Division. Is this a sign of change?
Well, I think it's a sign of our, I think, renewed focus on the importance of soils. And so just recapping real quickly the history you touched upon, you know, way back in the 1890s, we originally were the Bureau of the Soils. And over time, the mission of this agency has expanded. We were most recently created and here within the Department of Agriculture by President Roosevelt in 1935 when we were created as the Soil Conservation Service. And then in the mid-90s, our mission had expanded significantly over those following decades. And President Clinton then recognized the importance of the mission and its expanded focus. So now our agency is called the Natural Resources Conservation Service. But we've never lost our moorings in connection to the soils. And that's really what I think your program is about. And I'm very excited to be part of it, is this, I think, burgeoning, exploding, really, interest in the soils beyond the physical and chemical properties of the soils, but really trying to understand better the living properties of the soils and how we humans, particularly farmers, can take advantage of those properties to improve or protect their yield in coming years.
So how would you define your mission with regard to soil quality today?
We are solely a voluntary organization, and we work hand-in-hand in partnership with farmers and ranchers across the country. We employ soil scientists, range conservationists, timber experts, wildlife specialists, ecologists, you name it, a lot of professionals that work at that local level. And we are invited on to a farm or ranch by a farmer, by a landowner, a producer. And we always keep in the forefront of our mind, we're there at their invitation. And we're there to help them, bottom line, to be successful. So what we bring when we walk through that farm gate is 80-plus years of expertise and history. But overall, we think when applied on the landscape, these conservation approaches can help protect or even increase yield, whether it's livestock or grain or fiber, but then also ensure the long-term sustainability of those resources, the soils, the waters, the habitat, so we can have a healthy ecosystem upon which our rural economies and also our urban economies depend.
Now, you said when you're invited onto a farm, you are mm-hmm. aware of the fact that this is an invitation. But mm-hmm. what do you offer then to the farmer or the rancher? What can you do?
So we have two, I guess, lines of business. The one would be what we call a conservation plan, and that serves as the foundation for action. And we really think of a conservation plan as the blueprint for a farm or ranch. And so that professional works for that farm or rancher, tries to understand his or her business production goals. And then what are some of their resource management challenges in terms of it could be irrigation water, it could be their energy use, it could be erosion in the fields, it could be concerns with pests and pesticide use, nutrient management, you name it. So we can look across the whole operation and we can come up in partnership with the farmer then a blueprint for how to better manage their inputs but also the resources on their farm with always an eye towards either boosting or maintaining yield. And then what we also offer a farmer, a rancher, is financial assistance. And so this is not 100% subsidy. This is really a true cost share, where generally we share about 50 to 75% of the cost of a practice, of an approach on the operation, and then the farmer matches that cost. So really we provide a little bit of financial help to get a new conservation system going on their farm, and then once with an initial public investment, then the farmer or rancher takes it from there and continues the practice going forward.
Now, you mentioned looking at soil quality beyond the physical or chemical makeup of the soil, looking at it more as a living organism. And this is a shift that we've seen with a lot of sustainable agriculture, organic agriculture, et cetera. How do you see that shift affecting your work with farmers?
So traditionally, we were created in a dust bowl. And so our focus had been for many years, if not decades, have been really focused on erosion. And we've done a great job. If you look across the country, particularly we being now holistically, I think agriculture has done a great job. Farmers across the country nationally have reduced soil erosion by billions of tons of soil a year. And that's through putting in place voluntary conservation systems. But what we haven't necessarily done a good job of as a conservation mission is really looking holistically. So beyond the erosion, there's some other things that are going on a farm, such as infiltration of water into the groundwater system. And what that water carries is it moves into the groundwater. Sometimes it can carry farm inputs. And as those groundwaters move laterally into the fields and streams, into the rivers of Iowa, but elsewhere across the country, they carry a lot of those farm inputs. So what soil health is encouraging us to look at then is more holistically at a farm, sort of in three dimensions, but also bringing to the table a more holistic conservation system. What we at NRCS offer then is a suite of what we call practices, which is a suite of soil health enhancing practices that work in concert together, that reduce erosion, but also increase the health of the soils so they have an array of benefits to that producer, but then also folks who live downstream.
Now, you're probably familiar with the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, and that has been talked about a lot in the state of Iowa as far as water quality, but also soil quality as mm-hmm. well in the state. And it's been very strongly criticized by some groups for depending too much and entirely on voluntary compliance among farmers. You're also working with farmers across the nation on a completely voluntary level. Is that enough to look for farmers who are willing to embrace these practices as opposed to create some sort of national policy that encourages, at the very least, these practices?
So in my view, and I can say for our view here at NRCS, the short answer is yes. We have seen numerous examples of how the voluntary approach, when given time, and the right approach really can work. So focusing, for example, on water and water quality, there are examples we have in Iowa, but then across the Midwest, we're also out here in the Eastern Seaboard or the Chesapeake Bay region, where the voluntary approach, farmers really have stepped up, and they have put in place an array of conservation approaches on their lands that help protect and waters, but also reduce loss of soil and nutrients off their farm fields. So as I mentioned earlier, from a voluntary approach, we estimate that between 1982 and 2012, farmers have voluntarily reduced nationally losses of sediment from their fields by over 1.3 billion tons a year, which is a massive amount of soil. Just in the upper Midwest there, so we have had a report that looked at the upper Mississippi River Basin, which includes parts of Iowa, but then upwards into Wisconsin, North South Dakota, and Minnesota. So that sort of the headwaters there of the Mississippi River. And again, voluntary approaches have reduced deliveries of sediment and nitrogen and phosphorus to streams and rivers in the upper Mississippi River by upwards of 65% reduction for sediment and as high as a 41% reduction in phosphorus. So we have examples at the macro in the southern Midwest, really in the southern plains in Oklahoma. We've partnered there with the state, you know, state government, and there we take a voluntary approach where we work with farmers in targeted areas where there are impacts on water quality and there are concerns about the water quality coming off farm fields. And the state then puts in place monitoring systems that actually shows what happens over time when you put in place good conservation, how the water quality improves. And because of this approach, the state of Oklahoma has been able to take off their list, which they call their impaired list, their waters of concern, over 40 different stream segments and rivers in Oklahoma in the last decade alone. So we have a lot of examples where, just on water alone, the volunteer approach works, it's collaborative, it's less rancorous, and we think it's going to be more resilient in the long run.
Do you feel that I mentioned earlier that the UN General Assembly declared 2015 the International Year of Soils? Do you feel that there is a real movement in awareness of soil quality and the dynamics of soils that is changing practices around the United States and around the world right now?
I do, absolutely. And so I see that domestically. And this is an example of an approach which in many respects is being led by farmers. We've had farmers focused on soil quality or soil health, whatever you want to call it, going back decades. And these farmers have quietly been experimenting and innovating on their farms and sharing the results neighbor to neighbor as part of small working groups. But now over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, it's really starting to take off. And this is where farmers on their own are really starting to be able to show to their friends and colleagues, you know, members of their own, could be state associations or national associations, the results of what's happening. And I think because of that, this is an example where NRCS and its conservation partners there in Iowa, there are some of our core partners, for example, would be the soil and water conservation districts. In many cases, we are actually having to run to keep pace with farmers and their innovation, as opposed to us trying to promote a practice which farmers really don't want to support or don't quite get or don't want to necessarily incorporate in their operation.
You sound very optimistic about the changes that you see taking place right now. What do you consider our greatest challenges to be at this moment?
We've made good progress. So over the last couple of years, for example, one of the core practices that we've used and a lot of people use as a indicator of the expansion of soil health are cover crops. So we at NRCS alone have invested in over 5 million acres of cover crop practices across the United States in the last 3 or 4 years. So that's great, and that's a huge expansion of cover crop use. But when you put that in the context of that we have over 300 million acres of row crop, cropland in the United States, 5 million acres is just a drop in the bucket. So to answer your question, the challenge is, I think, expanding this, and that's why it's going to really take not just one agency, one conservation organization. This needs to be robust, and we need to have as many partners around the table. Iowa State, Soil and Water Conservation Districts, agricultural associations themselves, other universities. There needs to be a lot of different entities at the table investing in this and trying to bring additional resources to get the word out, to experiment, and to show what the results can mean for agriculture.
Jason Weller, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Jason Weller, Chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service, part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We will continue to talk about soil quality and different approaches to soil health throughout the rest of the hour. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about soil health in Iowa and around the country with policymakers, researchers, and farmers. We're learning about some new partnerships and approaches to protecting and nurturing the quality of our soil. You're also welcome to join this conversation with your questions and your experiences at 866-780-9100. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me now is Doug Peterson, Regional Soil Health Specialist for Iowa and Missouri for the Soil Health Division of the Natural Resources Conservation Service, which, of course, as I mentioned, is part of the USDA. He also farms in Missouri, raising cattle. Hello, Doug.
How are you today?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
You bet.
Rick Benarek is also here. He's state soil scientist with the Iowa Office of the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Hello, Rick.
Well, good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Doug, I'll start with you. We've been talking about some changes that are going on with the NRCS and some name changes, but also some organizational changes. Can you tell me a little bit about what is happening with the new Soil Health Division?
You bet. You know, the last few years here, the last 4 or 5 years, there's been such an increase in you know, in soil health and understanding that, that biological component to the soil and not just the chemical and the physical, that that NRCS decided to have a whole new division that focuses just on soil health, on teaching producers, teaching our staff around the country about some of these new, the new science, the new technology, the new understanding that we have of the soil. So they created a soil health division. We have 16 soil health specialists located around the United States. And our job will just be to train our staff and to train producers, to work with producers that have an interest in soil health.
And how much of a shift do you feel it is to take this approach to soil as a living organism? And I know that there are many farmers who have been thinking about soil that way for many years, although it is a growing school of thought. How much of a shift does that represent?
Well, I think, in some areas, as you mentioned, some people have been thinking about it that way for a long time. You know, when I was in college, you know, almost 30 years ago, you know, we had classes on biology, on soil microbiology, but we just didn't understand it as completely as we do today. You know, technology in all fields, you know, whether you're talking cell phones or soils, has changed dramatically in the last few years. And so our understanding of that biological component of the soil has greatly increased. And so there's just a lot of things that we understand now that we didn't even 20 years ago.
Well, Rick, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well. How much of a shift does this represent for you?
It's quite a shift. When I started off as a soil scientist, we just went out and mapped the different types of soil, not looking at the soil biology properties. We looked at the physical properties, the texture, the thickness of organic matter, how much organic matter was out there. Now we're looking at more the soil health, the soil biology, along with some of the physical properties, like how quickly will the water infiltrate into the soil and not run off, which will reduce erosion, the pore space in the soil, which helps remove the excess water. And that's where the microbes live, is in those pores with that moisture. We also look at the organic matter and how important the organic matter is for soil health. Actually, 1% organic matter will hold anywhere from 16,000 to 22,000 gallons of water. How important would that have been in 2012 when we had the drought? So we're starting to look at more of the soil biology and the microbes and how they affect the physical and chemical properties in the soil.
Well, and you talk about earlier in your career mapping soil quality. Does this mean that if you want to map soil quality, you have to test far more regularly to see how the soil is changing?
Absolutely. I mean, every little change in management will affect the soil, the health of the soil. If we can get away from less tillage, less disturbance, that's going to help keep the microbes and that population thriving in the soil. When we start doing disturbance, we're starting to decrease the populations, destroying the fungi, the nematodes, and the protozoa. Those microbes that help make more nutrients available to the plant, we're starting to destroy. So that's what we're looking at doing, is reducing disturbance. Any kind of management practices and how it affects the soil health.
Now, I know that you're involved in working on a new partnership with Iowa State University, a new soil health workbook to help communicate with farmers in Iowa, and I'm guessing beyond Iowa as well. Can you tell me about that project?
Yes, we created a partnership with Iowa State University, and we're working on a pocket-sized, waterproof Iowa soil health field guide, which will have field references for observable indicators of soil health or even the lack of soil health. Like if you have compaction or basically a compacted layer, which will restrict water movement and root development. It'll also be a concisely introduced basic soil health principles and provide illustrations and management practices that will influence soil health. So we'll have pictures. So the most important thing a farmer can do is go out and dig a hole in the soil and look at his soil. What does he have out there octane in the soil health? Does he have the good aggregate stability? Does he have a compacted layer? That's what this book will bring to their attention. Also, there'll be a pocket-sized companion notebook, which will be a tool for the farmer to record their organized field-by-field and year-by-year soil health notes and measure the progress. And we're also looking at the possibility of putting the field guide and the notebook into a smartphone application so they can have that out there with them.
So I'm guessing that this is also part of a greater educational effort as well, not just a book that they can put in their pocket, but what other kinds of things are you doing to reach out to farmers in Iowa so they understand? I mean, this is pretty complicated science, and they've got a lot of other things on their minds, too. What kind of educational process is there?
Well, what we've been doing is we've been holding soil health meetings and conferences. In fact, last week, in partnership with Iowa State University, Iowa State had a soil health conference which had over 280 farmers from probably 9 states, I believe. But we're fortunate that we have farmers around the state that are actually doing this, and they're pushing us to get more of this done. So they're also helping setting up field days. And they actually dig soil pits for us. We go down there and we look at the soil properties in the surface and how the root development is because of the structure in the soil. We just have a lot of interest out there in there. And we've actually gotten people from like Dave Brandt in Ohio to come to Iowa and relate his experiences and what's working for him. We've had Jay Fuhrer, who works for NRCS up in North Dakota, who's kind of the godfather of soil health. He started this 15, 20 years ago with our agency, and now it's really catching fire the last few years. But we're getting a lot of interest in these meetings, anywhere from 10, 15 people out in the field to over 100 in a conference.
We're talking about soil health this hour. I'm talking with Rick Benarek. He is state soil scientist with the Iowa Office of Natural Resources Conservation Service. And also with me is Doug Peterson, regional soil health specialist for Iowa and Missouri for the Soil Health Division of the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And Doug, I'd love to hear your perspective on that. Rick's talking about seeing a lot more farmers who are engaged in this kind of information, seeking education. You're a farmer yourself. What kind of shift are you seeing?
Well, I think there is a tremendous interest in it. You know, as Rick said, you know, we're having meetings everywhere. You can't hardly pick up a farm magazine that doesn't at least have an article on it in soil health. And so, you know, producers around the country, I mean, you know, Missouri and Iowa, where I work, producers are very interested in it. But on the other side of the coin, they're interested in it, but they want to make sure it's going to work for them, and they want to really learn a lot about it before they take those initial steps. And so, you know, we just continue to work with producers, have meetings. You know, one of the best ways we do that is to bring in other producers from our own state or other states and let our local producers talk to them and ask them questions about what worked, what didn't work, problems they had, you know, solutions they found for those problems. You know, most of the time, the farmers are very innovative. I mean, once they get an idea, once they want to try something, they'll find a way to make it work, and that's just been our greatest ally is those producers who are willing to try different things. So I
think a lot of us think about soil conservation when it comes to row cropping, and we will talk more about row cropping in just a moment and some of the different soil conservation techniques that are being used. But you are a cattle farmer, right? You raise cattle on pasture land.
Yes, ma'am. We have a grazing operation right down here on the Iowa-Missouri line.
So for you, what are some of the important lessons about soil quality when you're not, I mean, we're going to talk about no-till operations, but you're not tilling the soil. You're not necessarily growing crops, although, of course, the quality of your grassland is important.
Sure. The same principles that we really apply on cropland apply to grazing lands as well. You know, disturbance in a cropland situation, disturbance is going to be tillage. In a grazing land situation, haying is really a tremendous disturbance. You know, you've got a fairly tall canopy of grass and a lot of biological activity going on, and when you come in and cut that hay off, it heats the soil up, and it's really a huge disturbance to that biological component of the soil. So we really focus on very little hay or no hay in our operation, trying to focus on establishing a lot of native grasses that are, they just really do well in our soils, our climate here in the Midwest. I mean, and so we focus on a lot of native grasses, try to focus on keeping as much cover on the ground as we can, keeping as tall a canopy as we can most of the time.
And so are you actively then planting and nurturing different kinds of growth on your property? I don't want to use the term cover crop because it doesn't quite make sense mm-hmm. when you're talking about pasture land, but is that part of the same concept?
A little bit, yeah. We really focus on diversity, having a diverse mixture of plants in our pasture instead of just having a monoculture of fescue or brome. A lot of people in Iowa are familiar with brome. So we really try to have a diverse mixture, a lot of broadleaf plants, deep taprooted plants, try to focus on getting some of those native plants back in our pastures. We do occasionally use an annual cover crop, not very often, but occasionally, if we're trying to convert a cool season field back to a native pasture. We'll use some cover crops here and there, but primarily we just use a very intensive rotation, allowing those plants a recovery period, graze a field, and then move the cattle on, giving it a significant period of time to rest and recover, to replenish its root reserve, to replenish the above ground material.
Now, I can imagine that is definitely affecting your soil health. How does that benefit you as a producer? This sounds like a lot of work, a lot of effort.
It is, but you know, our organic matter is one of our indicators that we look at. Our organic matter in the last 10 years has went from about 2.5 to almost 5, 4.5 or 5. We probably, with our management, we have close to twice as many animal days per acre of carrying capacity as neighbors around us do because of that management that focuses on the soil.
So it allows you a higher production level.
You bet. Higher production level because more water's infiltrating. We're capturing more sunshine because we have more plants, more leaf material to capture more sunshine and convert that into other plant material. We have a better biologic activity. We've done some biological testing, and it shows without a doubt that the biological component is higher, is improved with this type of management.
We'll talk more about this as we go through the hour. We're going to bring another farmer into the conversation here in just a couple of minutes. But with the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy that was introduced a couple of years ago, the idea, of course, is to reduce the soil loss, to reduce nutrients that are entering our waterways. But it's also entirely based on voluntary compliance. So when you are educating farmers, when you're communicating with farmers, do you have to make a very strong case that making these changes is not only in the best interest of the environment and our water quality, but also in the best interests of their pocketbook? I mean, can you make that case?
Oh, I think you can. Producers are, if we can show that those inputs are staying in place, it's going to be more profitable for them, you know. So I think as we can show that retaining those nutrients means more dollars in their pocket, that's going to go a long way toward getting producers to accept more of these practices.
Change is a hard thing, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this also, Rick. It's difficult to get people to change their practices. What do you think is convincing for farmers?
Well, I think just talking to the other farmers, the coffee shop talk, what's working for them. also, when we give our presentations and we're out in the field, we say start small. Take a small area, small field, and try cover crops. Try a mixture and see how it goes. And then talk to your neighbors. What worked for them might work for you, or it gives you ideas. Like Doug said, farmers are very innovative. It's amazing how they can come up with some of these ideas and what's working for them and how to get the seeds out there to get the cover crop growing. But start small and expand from there. And because what works for one sometimes doesn't always work for another. But start up small and learn from those experiences.
As I drive around the state of Iowa, I am seeing a change in the land. I'm seeing more cover crops, but the majority of fields still, of course, don't have cover crops. How much of an increase are we seeing in Iowa?
I believe, we have about 36 million acres of land in Iowa, and we're only down to maybe 5,000 or 500,000 acres or so of cover crops. And I think there are some farmers that we're not accounting for. So we probably between 500,000 and 600,000 acres this past year of cover crops. But it's a slow process, but it's building momentum every year. It seems to be almost doubling.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Rick Benarek, state soil scientist with the Iowa Office of Natural Resources Conservation Service, and Doug Peterson, regional soil health specialist with the NRCS. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about soil health in Iowa. I'm talking with policymakers, researchers, and farmers. We also want to hear from you. You're welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Doug Peterson, regional soil health specialist for Iowa and Missouri for the Soil Health Division of the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Rick Benarek is state soil scientist with the Iowa Office of the NRCS. And I want to bring someone else into the conversation now. Steve Berger is with us. He farms near Wellman, Iowa, and he's been putting a lot of these practices into practice over the years that we've been talking about as far as making sure he has strong soil health on his farm. Hello, Steve.
Yo, good morning. Morning, Charity. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And you and your father, who I'm sorry you lost recently, but the two of you have been involved in conservation-minded agriculture for a lot longer than most people in the state of Iowa. This goes back more than 35 years in your family of using no-till practices. Can you tell me how that got started on your farm?
Well, my dad was very conservation-minded, and we just wanted to protect our soils, especially with the soybeans on our sloping hills here in southern Iowa, and we just wanted to stop soil erosion. And it really got started with a call from our extension director, Jim Freer, wanted us to come to a meeting, you know, this is back in 1978, and wanted to teach farmers, you know, have a meeting about no-till farming. And so we went, and that very much was along with my father's thinking, and that's where we got started. And it was a kind of exciting times, and in those days, it was the Soil Conservation Service, the SCS, and we had buy-in also with our farm retailers and several farmers, and we just had a good group try to learn how to no-till farm back in those days.
So no-till farming came to your farm early, but you also were pretty early adopters of cover crops as well. That was about 16 years ago. What prompted that change?
Well, we still needed to add to the no-till, and actually our first no-till experience back in 78 was planting into a rye cover crop. So our we did start with a cover crop, you know, back 35, 36 years ago, but, you know, as we no-tilled, we found that that still wasn't enough, and we got that biology working in the soils, and, you know, as you do that, you lose residue because of the microbes, you know, they'll eat that residue off the top, and so we needed to add some more cover, and we started doing that about in the early 90s and kept with it, and it's worked really well for us.
Now, with the changes that you and your dad made on the farm and the things that you started observing, we've been talking this hour about how the science has come so far in recent years to teach us about the soil and to help us think about soil as a living organism. As that science has come to the surface, how have you responded to that? Has this just enforced a lot of the things that you've seen over the years?
I'm not sure we really, or if I really understand what's going on biologically. You know, as you know, Doug said earlier, when we were in college 30 years ago, we weren't really educated on that. But what I can see today, you know, after long-term no-till and cover crops, with these heavier rain events we get, we don't see near the erosion off of these hills. In fact, it's practically stopped in a real good rye cover crop. And that's basically from the change in the biology. It's just making that soil more resilient. And kind of seeing is believing. And I'm not sure if I can always biologically explain it, but boy, I can sure see the erosion just stopping. And that's probably the number one thing that keeps us at it.
Well, and you have spent a lot of time sharing your experiences with other farmers. Why is that such an important part of this process for you? Because I'm sure that becomes very time consuming and you've got your hands full.
Well, we enjoy it. It's a passion. And if we want to move this movement forward, I guess, as far as, you know, improving soil quality and cleaning up the water, you know, it's going to be a big part of the farmer's responsibility. And a lot of farmers I talk to, I think they really want to buy into it, but they tell me this has to work, you know. And so I guess we've kind of made it a mission here in our farm to try to make a system or find systems that where we can integrate cover crops into our corn soybean rotation and also our livestock operation. And it takes innovation, and we've got just a great group of farmers here in Washington County, you know, that we call and talk often about different aspects of it, you know, and farmers are innovative, and if we have a problem, we're going to try to solve it rather than, you know, go back and till the soil. And after we've been after this a long time, you know, we actually do see yield increases. There is a production benefit, you know, to adopting cover crops, and it comes from that just adding more oxygen to the soil with that air-water relationship, better soil structure, you get better rooting, you get more nutrients into those corn soybean roots. And so to me, there is an actual production increase, and you know, that drives us even harder. I think it's a niche to help our farm.
Well, when you talk to other farmers, are there some misconceptions about that? I mean, you just said they say, well, this has to work. And, of course, this is people's lives on the line, their livelihood. Is there a misconception that cover crops will reduce yield?
Sure, there is. But, you know, I think one of the tough things, it just takes time. You know, it took hundreds of thousands of years to form the soil. And, you know, it takes time to, you know, to build a system to where you can get that soil structure, you know, to where you can get improved crop yields. And it might take 2 to 3 years, you know, it's not going to take 30. But I think with cover crops and in the no-till, you can learn to, you know, plant into a cover. And when I talk to farmers, you know, I come up with 4 or 5 points that I think that can help them. You know, we talk about the technology things that we can do to help farmers increase yields, and it takes patience, and that's probably one of the hardest things to do to get this movement going forward. It just takes time, and a lot of times, you know, we're on a different clock too as farmers. You know, we have to work with bankers, landlords, you know, there's peer pressure, and so there are challenges that way that we have to work through.
A lot of these conversations about farming practices in Iowa have become very political, and maybe that's how we see them in the media. Maybe that's how we see them from the outside. But as a farmer, does it feel that way, that farming practices have become politicized in the state?
Oh, they probably, you know, everything's political to some extent. And, you know, the way I look at it, you know, there's a lot of things I can't control. They're out of my, you know, control. And so what I do is just kind of keep my head down here in the farm and know that, you know, in the long run, we've got to make this system work. It's beneficial to me and my farm. It can be beneficial to my neighbors who are adapting this quite a bit in our area in Washington County, and it can be good for everybody. But so I spend most of my time just trying to, you know, learn systems that can be successful for farmers. And if it's successful, it'll take off.
Well, we've been talking about how these kind of practices have been building, but it's a slow build. Do you feel, here's a political question for you, but do you feel like policymakers need to do more to encourage farmers to adopt these practices?
Oh, I just think the incentives that are out there right now are very good. I think that it's just going to take a little bit more time. We are, you know, as you mentioned, you are seeing more cover crops as you go up and down the road, although the acres are small, we are increasing them. And, you know, I think right now, we stay on the voluntary approach, and it, you know, farmers have to have small steps of success to make this work, because if they have a failure, and you can, if you, you know, production-wise, learning how to, you know, grow a corn and soybean plant, you know, in a cover, you know, if you have failures, you're going to go backwards. And that's, I think it's, let's just take small step forward. And we learned this in the no-till, you know, back in the 70s and 80s. I think there got to be a real push in conservation planning to really push the no-till, and that didn't work very well. And we went to these alternate systems, and then we were back, you know, into full tillage. So I think just slow and steady. We are doing better. You know, I think we look at things in such a small prism, you know. We got to kind of step back and look at this in longer term. You know, in the last 30 years, you know, we have decreased soil erosion by quite a bit, you know. And do we need to improve? Yep, there's room for a lot of improvement. And I think that we're moving in the right direction. I think we're moving in the right direction. Maybe some of the critics would say we're not moving fast enough, but I think it's more important that we're making steps to improve soil erosion and improve water quality at the same time.
I'm talking with Steve Berger. He farms near Wellman, Iowa. We're talking about soil quality this hour. Also with me, Doug Peterson, Regional Soil Health Specialist for Iowa and Missouri for the Soil Health Division of the NRCS. Rick Benarek, State Soil Scientist with the Iowa Office of the NRCS. And we've got a lot of people who want to join this conversation in the next few minutes. So let's get to the phones. Catherine is on the line in Ames. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi there. And you are involved in soil education. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, I graduated in 2014 with a master's in soil science. And at the end of 2014, I sent a proposal to the UN to have an International Year of Soils blog, because I felt that a lot of the aspects of the international soils were geared toward professionals and people who are already invested in soils. So I wanted a blog that anyone could contribute to and that it had an aspect of storytelling to it that would bring more people into the conversation.
And so in reaching out to people around the world to talk about soil quality, it sounds like you want to take this conversation beyond the farm.
Yeah, I mean, our blog has had, we've had submissions from scientists, farmers, activists, students, journalists. I think a lot of people are interested in it. They just needed a platform.
So why do you think it's important for someone who's not involved personally in farming or in an activity that may affect soil quality? Why is it important for us to understand this?
I mean, I think that soils are a legacy of the time that we're in, and soils are a commons. They belong to all of us.
All right. Well, Catherine, thank you.
And I think I
go on.
Yeah, thanks, Charity.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And let's get to the next call on the line. Let's talk with Jennifer in Des Moines. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I have a question for Steve. I'm just wondering if he could talk a little bit more about what's going on with data collection for showing that cover crops and changing practices can be economical as well as better for the environment, and maybe what groups and resources are out there to help farmers.
All right, Jennifer, thanks a lot for your call. And Steve, you can answer that one. We can also toss that one around as well. But Steve,
sure.
Why don't you start?
Yeah, good question. She mentioned data, and we do keep a lot of records. You know, we soil test on a regular basis, you know, for our manure management plans. And so with those tests, we get organic matter tests, and so we know where our organic matter is going. So we're slightly increasing our organic matter. We're also beginning to test our tile lines for nitrates and phosphorus leaving the farm. We're doing that through the Iowa Soybean Association's on-farm network, and we're trying to build kind of a curve, you know, taking these tests different times of the year to kind of know what is leaving the farm. And so, and we also have weather stations on the farm now. We've got one through the Mesonet with Iowa State University that Elwin Taylor has helped me put in. And so, you know, they're just almost every day we're getting, you know, hit even from the private sectors, you know, in trying to measure soil nitrates in the soil. And it's almost too much, but we're just trying to gather data. And as we do this, you know, we're going to learn, you know, where we're at. And then Mother Nature might throw you, you know, a different year or two. So, but good record keeping is really important in trying to track that success, or maybe in sometimes things that don't work as well. So we are keeping track, and it takes a while to build this.
All right. Well, anybody else want to add something to what Steve just said, Rick or Doug?
Well, there is a lot of information out there from producers, you know, who have a lot of data on how cover crops and how no-till have improved their yields. You know, we have several YouTube videos. NRCS has an Unlock the Secrets in the Soil program, a campaign. There's a lot of YouTubes on our website under that heading that will show producers, and a lot of them will give actual numbers of what it's done for their profitability.
All right. And Practical Farmers of Iowa is another organization that's been working with a lot of farmers around the state and disseminating this information. It strikes me that there are a lot more organizations that are involved in sharing information like this now. Let's go back to the phones. John is on the line, on the road today. Hi, John.
Hey, Charity, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I was partially answered. I'm interested in both tiling systems and also our crop insurance programming. We seem to incentivize the growing of crops, for example, on highly erodible soils, and I'm interested in your panelists. Thoughts as to perhaps how do we improve upon our crop protection insurance system so that we're not farming vulnerable soil.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. Steve, do you have a response to that? I don't know if you could hear him well, but he was asking questions about crop insurance and how crop insurance policies may relate to soil health.
Yeah, we do actually carry crop insurance on this farm, and right now we think that the one point that was made earlier, you know, we feel that actually growing cover crops can improve our crop yields and production systems. And when I think about crop insurance and claims and my premiums I pay in, we have not had a claim on this farm, you know, probably in the last, well, 10 or 12 years, and that's going through the drought years, because actually using the cover crops has helped us make it through the drought years. And so when people bring up crop insurance, I think in ways that, you know, it's actually helped us, you know, maybe reduce our claims, because, you know, we have better yields through the tough years, like in 2012, when yields were much reduced, you know.
Right, and you've not only been through drought years, you've been through some really wet years with that,
right,
too.
And so I think of it that way. Also, there's another small issue that we do have to kind of partner with some of the policies that are coming out, that, you know, growing cover crops and when you terminate those cover crops and the technicalities of, is it going to hurt that crop? And we got to make sure that our policies are in tandem with our production practices and when we plant that corn and when we terminate it. And so I guess that's what comes to mind when you talk about, you know, crop insurance and, you know, and cover crops. So.
Well, we're nearly out of time. And Steve, I want you to have the last word here. We had that call from Catherine talking about wanting people beyond the farm to understand soil quality and why it's important. For those of us who aren't farmers and maybe don't know farmers, what do you want us to know about this?
Well, I think protecting our soil is important to everybody. And, you know, as farmers, it does work. And I tell farmers, if you want to improve soil quality, let's don't stir the soil. Let's keep something growing all the time to protect it.
All right. Well, Steve Berger, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yep. Thank you, Charity.
Steve Berger farms near Wellman, Iowa. Also, thank you, Rick Benarek.
Well, thank you, Charity, for having me on.
Rick Benarek, a state soil scientist with the Iowa Office of the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And thank you, Doug Peterson.
Thank you, ma'am.
Doug Peterson, regional soil health specialist for the Iowa and Missouri with the NRCS. This is Talk of Iowa.